Hello, everybody. Welcome to the session today on personality types of actuaries and implications for service and leadership, which will be presented by Leonie Tickle and Andrew Gale.
Thanks. Can you hear me? Yeah, great. Thanks very much, presenter, and welcome, everyone. Well, I'm sure everyone in the room is aware of some of the stereotypes associated with actuaries. According to those stereotypes, we're introverted, perhaps even bland and boring, brainy, but sometimes incomprehensible to others, logical, meticulous, rational, conservative, perhaps even rigid and pedantic. I've always thought these stereotypes are a little harsh, but I guess I would, being an actuary myself. But since I'd had an interest in psychology and had studied it, I thought it would be good to look at this in a little more detail and see if the stereotype was actually true. So today I'll just be reviewing what we know about the personality types of actuaries and also accountants, where there's been quite a bit of research done. And I'll be talking briefly about a study I'm in the middle of to look at this issue in a little more depth. So why is it interesting to even look at this issue of actuaries' personality types? Well, I think it's very valuable for individuals to pursue this for their own self-development and for a better appreciation of our own strengths and others' strengths. We all tend to make an error called the false consensus effect, which is that we assume that everyone thinks the way we do, and in fact, they don't. So having a framework like the Myers-Briggs Personality Indicator, which I'll be talking about today, can, I think, be really helpful in appreciating that others think in different but equally valid and valuable ways. So there's benefits to the individual, but are there also benefits to looking as a profession at the personality profile of our group as a whole? And I think there are. Careers advisors use measures like the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator to advise students about potential suitable careers, and yet we know very little about personality profiles of actuaries, and we know actually nothing about how satisfied different personality profiles are with an actuarial career. So I think there's value in it from that point of view. Academics can make use of this research because personality types closely related to learning style, and so if we can capitalise on our students' preferred learning styles, that can be something helpful. And I think employers and the profession as a whole can benefit by knowing more about this. Now, as a profession, I think my personal view is that we really want to encourage diversity among our membership. I think it's a very healthy, valuable thing for any profession to have that. So thinking about whether we attract a diverse range of people into the profession and then whether we nurture that diversity, I think can be a valuable thing. I'll just start by briefly reviewing the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, which is the one I'll be concentrating on in my presentation today, and then I'll go on to talk about personality types of firstly accountants and then what we know about actuaries. So the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator is based on a theory of psychological type developed by Carl Jung almost 100 years ago now, and the mother and daughter team of Catherine Briggs and Isabel Briggs Myers developed this measure to reflect Jung's theory. And interestingly, they initially developed the measure to match women volunteering for the World War II effort with suitable roles, but they then went on to spend several decades refining that measure into the form that it's basically in today. And it's a very widely used measure in business. About 2 million people take the indicator each year around the world. I'm sure many of you have taken it as part of leadership courses or team development courses in your work. And what the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator does is look at four dimensions and posits that there's two possible preferences for the way individuals can act on each of those dimensions, and so that generates 16 personality profiles according to all the possible combinations there. It's not meant to be a limiting or stereotyping exercise. It's not meant to be that you're destined to be a ESTP or whatever and you can't rise above it. You know, Jung said that a mature individual is one that's learnt to develop all their skills, not just their most preferred skill, and can therefore be more responsive to situations as they present themselves. So that kind of self-awareness is an important foundation for emotional intelligence, I think, which Andrew will be speaking about later in the presentation. I'll whiz through the four dimensions fairly quickly because there's more detail in the paper. if you're interested in pursuing that. But basically the first dimension is to do with where we get our energy, and we have extroverts and introverts as the two possibilities there. These terms have become really widely used, but perhaps misused, I think. Introverts aren't shy, inhibited, socially inept people. Actually, they're people that get energy from the internal world, so reflecting on their own ideas, whereas extroverts get energy from interaction and action in the external world. So the extroverts among us at the convention will be finding long sessions of listening to presentations maybe a little draining on their energy, and the introverts might be finding the dinners and lunches more draining on their energy. The two pie charts I've shown show the proportions of each type in the population in general and among university students. So on this dimension, roughly 50-50. The second dimension is how we take on information from the world. So we have senses and intuitives. Senses take on information through the senses. So take on factual information from the world through seeing, hearing and so on, and have the fundamental paradigm, I guess, that facts speak for themselves, whereas intuitives take on facts as illustrations of a broader principle. So these types of people are more interested in seeing the big picture and more naturally draw links between facts rather than seeing them as facts alone. I think of it as a sensing type would see the world as maybe a series of photographs of specific elements in the environment, and an intuitive would see the world as, you know, an impressionist painting where the overall whole is clearly represented and the detail isn't as clearly specified. Many more senses than intuitives in the population, and to a lesser extent in the university population, intuitives tend to perform well at school-type tasks, so more of them progress to university. Third dimension is how we make decisions about that information that we collect. So we have thinkers who make decisions in a rational, objective, logical way, try and treat everyone fairly, treat everyone equally as a means of being fair, whereas feelers have a more subjective approach, treat everyone as individuals. Many more men report as thinkers and women as feelers, so there is a gender difference on that one. And finally, how we deal with the outer world. This is a measure of whether we emphasise our perceiving function, either sensing or intuition, so whether we emphasise collecting information or making decisions about it, either in a thinking or feeling way. So judges are the ones who emphasise the decision-making aspect, so they like to come to closure, make decisions, tend to be organised, scheduled. Perceivers emphasise the collecting information stage. So they like to postpone decisions, keep discussion open, be flexible and adaptable as things come up. So if we combine each of those preferences, we get what's called the type table of the 16 types, and I've put there just a type name which was suggested by David Kersey, not as a means of stereotyping, but just to get to quick grips with what each type looks like. And if we now look at the proportion of each type in the population, what I've shown here is each dot representing 1% of the population. You can see we've got a lot of senses, which are the two left-hand columns in the population, and a bit of a spread around each of the 16 types, as you'd expect. Some correlations between some of the dimensions. For example, N's and P's tend to go together a bit more, S's and J's. In this way, this measure is different to other personality measures derived from factor analysis where the dimensions are independent. Okay, so let's take a look at what we know about accountants. There's been quite a few studies done, you know, over 15 over the last 20 years. I've chosen one of them to represent here, but they're very consistent in their findings, which I'll mention again later. So as you might expect, we see a lot of ISTJ types and ESTJ types among accountants. So S, senses, practical, fact-based way of collecting information, a rational, logical way of making decisions, the T dimension, and J, like coming to conclusions, organised, scheduled. So let's take a closer look at the ISTJ type, which I've seen called the inspector or also appropriately the auditor. And interestingly, this is the type that careers advice manuals tend to direct towards, both accounting and actuarial careers. So these people have all the features that we'd probably like to see in an accountant: practical, matter-of-fact, realistic, logical, analytical, reliable, dutiful, tend to trust accepted methods. And if they haven't developed their lesser preferred skills, we might see that they overlook the big picture and may not consider the impact of decisions on people. ESTJs, the supervisors, are the second most common type in most studies of accountants and accounting students, and they have a basically similar way of viewing the world and making decisions, but I guess expressed in a more extroverted way. So tend to be a bit more directive in controlling people and situations and assertive than the ISTJ type, with similar possible weaknesses of overlooking the big picture and the people aspect. So as I mentioned, there have been close to 20 studies, and all of them have found this dominance of the STJ personality type, a third to 50% of the profession, whereas only 20% of the population falls into those groups. There's some differences between accountants in different roles. So accountants who have moved into a senior partner role are more likely to be N intuitive types than sensing types, against the overall trend. Interestingly, among accounting students, it's been shown that extrovert, intuitive, feeling, perceiving types tend to drop out more often, perhaps because of the content, perhaps because of the way the accounting faculty teach, because the faculty are probably also having the dominant personality types themselves. And this has caused some concern in the accounting profession. I've seen a number of papers with this type of quote here, where there's concern expressed about whether the profession's diverse, whether it has the skills to meet the current challenges facing it. Well, what about actuaries? How do they compare? Do they follow a similar type to accountants, which the careers advisors manuals would suggest that they do? I'd always thought that perhaps they might not, especially on the sensing intuition dimension, and in fact that does show up in the one study that has been conducted of actuaries. So in the green here, I now show each 1% of the population of actuaries and how they're distributed across the types, according to a study conducted by Mary Patrick in North America. And she studied 300 Canadian actuaries in detail, which was about a sixth of the profession at that time, and also reported some results in less detail for US actuaries. But what she found was that the ISTJ type, again, was very common among actuaries, but also we have quite a large number of the rational types, you might call them, the INTJs and the INTPs. We've already talked about the ISTJ type for accountants, so I just mentioned here that in her study it was found that 23% of actuaries fell into that type, which is about double what we find in the population and similar to what we find among accountants. But the second most common type was the INTJ, so a similar profile but taking a more intuitive, conceptual approach to collecting information rather than a fact-based sensing approach. And that one change creates quite a different profile, as you can see. So here we have the mastermind, or I've also seen it called the strategist. These people tend to be global, creative, conceptual thinkers, like looking at the big picture, of course logical, critical, objective, but unlike the ISTJs, tend to value new, innovative methods, are independent in the way they look at things and approach a problem. Possible weaknesses are, in contrast to the ISTJs, they may tend to overlook the detail and tend to cover off on the big picture. And again, because of the thinking focus, might not look at the impact of decisions on people. The third most common type in her study was the INTP, called the architect, maybe also the researcher or the academic. And the personality traits associated with this type are curiosity about basically everything in the world, wanting to investigate the reasons behind things, come up with a logical model of what's going on, very flexible, adaptable, dislike routine, get bored with a problem as soon as it becomes routine in any way, like challenging problems. May tend to be impractical, so the absent-minded professor is kind of the stereotype of this type at the extreme. And again, because of the thinking focus, perhaps a lack of consideration of people impacts. So overall, is the stereotype true? Well, we definitely do seem to be, on the basis of this one study anyway, an introverted profession, with 70% of us preferring introversion compared to accountants, 50%, and the general population, about 50%. We also definitely do seem to be rational, logical, objective people. 80% prefer thinking over feeling, and that's much higher than in the general population, even higher than accountants. But the area where we maybe don't meet the stereotype is on the intuitive versus sensing dimension. Our stereotype as being meticulous, maybe even rigid and pedantic, I don't think is borne out by the study. In fact, we have a high proportion of intuitives, which are the people who focus on the big picture, the overall concept, aren't necessarily so concerned with the detail. I would argue that our types are probably overall a little more diverse than accountants. We're definitely more introverted on the whole, according to this study, but we have a mix of styles of taking on information, which perhaps makes us a little more diverse in that aspect. That's my personal opinion. I mentioned in my paper that I've just taken a brief look at the 15 of the 18 participants in the new Institute Step Up program, which was a program aimed to develop leadership skills of the future leaders of the profession. So not a typical group, perhaps, a group of young actuaries who are interested in leadership development, identified for their leadership potential. So we can't expect to draw too many conclusions from this, but I thought it would be interesting to take a look. I've represented each of those 15 individuals by a red triangle. So we see that the two types that came out the most commonly were the INTP and the ENFJ, very different to what we expect looking at the overseas study of the overall profile of actuaries. Not a single ISTJ, which is supposed to be the most common type among this group. So perhaps there's been a change in the profile since 1996 when the previous study was published. Perhaps this is a group which we can't really take as representative. Perhaps there's been a change over time in the profile of actuaries. So it would be interesting to know more. I've started collecting some data from the first year Macquarie University students about not just their personality types according to Myers-Briggs, but also what attracted them to an actuarial career, how satisfied they are with their studies so far, what their career plans are, and I'm hoping to draw some links there between personality type and those types of dimensions. Hopefully have more to report by the time of the next convention. Thank you very much, and I'll now hand over to Andrew.
Well, good morning, and so what are some of the so-whats of this preliminary research into personality types? So I'd like to go through that, including some of the implications for service and leadership. And I might also just start with a couple of broad observations about actuaries and success in different sort of career formats, and then move on to some of the implications. So certainly our observations, if you think about successful actuaries, is that there is no one particular style. We have very successful actuaries who are, you know, your eminent and respected technical actuaries. We have actuaries who would be regarded as being very successful, who are leading and influential what I would call commercial actuaries. So that might mean that they are trusted advisors, either within corporations or to corporations, or they might be in an executive capacity. And we have leading academics. So not surprisingly, that demonstrates that there's a rich diversity of styles in terms of success as an actuary. And then it would be interesting actually to find out what some of that linkage would be to the diversity of personality types, which Leonie's just run through. Another broad observation before covering implications is if you think about success and many of the characteristics which distinguish successful actuaries, there's a whole range of factors, but some which I've sort of noted there from observation over a long time is an ability to deal with complexity and ambiguity, high in emotional intelligence, obviously strong technical competence, but combining that with business acumen, lifelong growth, high energy and achievement, and so on. You can see all the some of the dimensions there: independent thinking, strong communication skills. And the question which arises, and we'll also touch on this with the personality types, is to what extent are those sort of attributes promoted at schools? Has a predisposition to some of those attributes, is that used when you look at university entry requirements? If you look at the way in which we nurture and develop talent for people coming into the profession, to what extent do we place an emphasis on those sorts of skills? And there is a linkage here, I think, with some of the personality type issues for us to think about. So let's talk about some of the implications. First of all, career advice. Based on limited anecdotal feedback, I think it's pretty clear that lots of career advisors have pretty stereotyped views about actuaries, the sorts of stereotypes that Leonie talked about before. Narrow perceptions, need to be good at maths, technical, narrow, respected. Now, to ensure a healthy diversity of people in our profession, we actually need to also be emphasising actuaries' conceptual and solution skills, that sort of big picture sort of domain which Leonie was talking about. We also need to be talking about a proper understanding of introversion and extroversion. Introversion and extroversion is not the common lay interpretation of it. It's where we source energy from within or from interacting with others. So I think already we've got some good university, some good institute initiatives happening, the More Than Maths initiative, and there's also some fabulous career advice material which has come out from the institute. And I think we are in a position to start shifting the perceptions of career advisors. In New South Wales alone, for example, there's a major regional conferences of careers advisors, three conferences. We could cover all the career advisors in three presentations to start shifting perceptions. And I think some of this research on personality types would really feed well into that. An extra implication is around university entry requirements. Currently, they're highly skewed to UAIs, TERs, or whatever the equivalents are, and a requirement, obviously, that there's a strong results in higher level maths. Well, yes, those things are all important. But to ensure a healthy diversity, the question arises, you know, should there be requirements be somewhat less monodimensional and more open to embracing a broader style and competency mix? So not only promote that at schools, but also in terms of university entry requirements. The next dimension I'd like to cover is just about learning styles. If you look at MBTI preferences, depending on your personality style, you will respond better to different forms of learning styles. So for some people, that might be active experimentation using scenarios. For some, it'll be reflection. Some will be self-instruction. And others will be through active debate and instruction. So the question arises is, in terms of our education processes, through the institute, through universities, do we capitalise and do we actually respond to some of these different learning styles? So there's probably room for enhancements there. Next implication is just to think about, I guess, self-development and managing your own career. And there's ample evidence to suggest that to be successful, whether that's in your career, whether it's making a contribution in an organisation, in the community, as a professional, or in leadership, IQ is simply not enough. One needs to have a very strong EQ, an emotional quotient, or alternatively called emotional intelligence. Now, key elements of emotional intelligence are personal competence, and the key aspects of personal competence are around self-awareness and self-management. And the other key dimension is around social competence, which is how we manage our relationships, especially social awareness and broader relationship management. A first essential step in having developing a healthy EI, a healthy emotional intelligence, is really strong self-awareness and awareness of others. And I think one of the valuable ways in which we could use a profiling tool like MBTIs is, first of all, to get much deeper self-insight, but also understand what are the types of people that we interact with and how do we best deal with those. And there's some of the elements that we're bringing out in the leadership program. Next implication. Now, as a profession, I think we are in a terrific position to make a really valuable contribution in organisations, in the community, obviously in the profession. And when you talk about a service contribution, one of my favourite authors on that issue is a guy called Robert Greenleaf, who was a prolific researcher and thought leader, especially back in the 60s and 70s. So just a couple of observations here which are relevant. Quotes from Robert Greenleaf. Caring for persons, the more able and the less able serving each other is the rock upon which a good society is built. Whereas until recently, caring was largely person to person, now much of it is mediated through institutions. If a better society is to be built, then the most open course is to raise both the capacity to serve and the very performance as servant of existing major institutions. Why is that relevant? A lot of the contribution that we make as actuaries is actually helping institutions fulfil their charter and be effective in delivering on their social equity role. He goes on to say, it begins with the natural feeling that one wants to serve first. Then conscious choice brings one to aspire to lead. So this is the concept of servant leadership. And my observation is, I believe many actuarial people are in fact servant first. They start off wanting to make a contribution, wanting to make a difference, and they evolve into leadership. That's certainly the hallmark of a good consultant. I think it's also the hallmark of the more effective leaders in corporations. Now, I think in our profession we've got wonderful talent coming through, which can be nurtured and developed. That's part of the focus of the leadership program. And again, Robert Greenleaf says, one firm note of hope comes through. Some extraordinarily able, mature, servant-disposed men and women are emerging in their early 20s and 30s. And these are the people who can make a great contribution to society and to the profession. So the question which arises is, are the personality types which Leonie has been profiling, it would be really interesting to see what might be some of the linkages between some of those personality types and those who really want to make a service contribution to the profession and in the community, and whether somewhere along the line we should be placing a greater emphasis on this in the selection and development of actuaries. I'll just finish off with a couple of quick observations on leadership so we've got time for Q&A. But again, some pretty consistent themes. One of the really good texts on leadership is called Resonant Leadership. And in this, which is written by Richard Boyatzis and Annie McKee, they talk about the three key elements in effective leadership being mindfulness, which again is self-awareness and awareness of others, hope, which includes building a positive and realistic picture of the future, and compassion. And again, the essential foundation to effective leadership is self-awareness. Now, there are many ways in which you can develop self-awareness, but I put it to you that something like the MBTI profiling, if you haven't been through it, is a really valuable starting point just to get a sense of both your own style, where you source your energy from, how you interact with others, and equally, if you can start sensing the style of other people, you'll be more effective in relationship management. The other really interesting research when you talk about leadership styles is there's been some fantastic work done, especially a book written by Jim Collins, which is called Good to Great, How Organisations Emerge from Good Organisations to Fantastic Organisations. And he talks about various different styles of leadership. This is based on decades of research. And without going through all of this, he talks about the pinnacle of leadership actually being what he calls level 5 leaders, which are people which build enduring greatness through a paradoxical mix of personal humility and professional will. It's actually quite different than what you would expect in terms of the stereotype view of leaders of being the hard-driving A-type personality. He found the most effective styles were these people who had... They talk about it being a study in duality, that these people are modest and willful, in the positive sense of the word, humble and fearless. Such leaders direct their energy and ego away from themselves and into larger roles of building great institutions, which is similar in many respects to the concept of servant leadership. So I think another interesting area for research might be the link actually between MBTI profiles and leadership styles. I think there's actually quite a few actuaries who either already are or have got the potential to be to exhibit that sort of level five leadership because they're just focused on making a really valuable contribution, not being loud and boastful about it, and getting on with the role. There are just a few quick thoughts on some implications. Hopefully that stimulates some of the discussion. Leonie, you might want to finish off on this one, which is just about some of the current areas of future research which you have in mind.
Yeah, I briefly mentioned this actually at the end, so I probably don't need to go through it in much more detail, but just flagging this study of the first year students that's underway and the types of links that I hope to draw from that, and hopefully in the future, perhaps the study of actuaries. It'd be great to link personality type with career or job satisfaction, success perhaps, but it obviously a difficult task, but something that could be valuable for the future. So I think perhaps we'll throw it open to questions now if anyone has any.
Thank you, Leonie and Andrew. It's been a very interesting presentation and paper also. And I think that this conference has been a good display of the variety of actuarial personality types that exist. I'd like to invite any people who've got questions to come forward to the microphone now. Yep.
John Maroney, thanks presenter, and thanks to two great presentations there. Just a question, you mentioned some of the personality traits have got a gender sort of correlation. Is there anything on ethnicity, given we've really had a changing sort of demographic in terms of the nature of actuaries coming through our system now compared to 10, 20 years ago?
That's an interesting question. I haven't looked at it actually. I'm not sure how widely the Myers-Briggs is used across different cultures. Interesting question. I'm not sure.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Yes. I'll have the gentleman at the front first.
Rodney Scott. Is there any link between the personality profiles and leadership ability?
There definitely have been quite a few studies on MBTI and leadership. They've found that leaders tend to be thinking types and also judging types. So quite decisive, assertive types, kind of exactly what you might expect. But I think there's some doubt about whether that's actually a valid conclusion to draw. I mean, I think the idea is that perhaps people who are in leadership positions feel that they have to report that kind of preference because they think it's expected of them as leaders. So, and then there has been other research that shows that certain types exercise their leadership in a certain way. So sensing types tend to be very practical, hands-on type managers. Intuitive types are more big picture in the way that they exert their leadership. So differences in styles, but a clear emphasis on thinking and judging types, and also extroverts more often, with some doubt about what that actually means.
I think the one area where there is perhaps a slight myth is the common perception of strong correlation between extroversion and leadership. And in fact, you can have a variety of styles, and many effective leaders do source their energy from within rather than the extroversion style. So both preferences in that regard are equally valid in terms of leadership contribution and potential.
Would you like? Jenny Dean, I've actually done the detailed Myers-Briggs, and my question relates to how much investigation you're going to do to the sections below the letters. For example, I'm an ISTP, but I'm very organised and project planning oriented, and when I went into the five sections below, I actually was very extreme P, extreme J on different sections, and I was just wondering if that's going to be incorporated.
That's the step two, I think, of the Myers-Briggs type measure, which is a more detailed form of that measure. Actually, I wasn't going to use that more detailed form for the study, just focusing on the major dimensions, but you're right, within each dimension there are quite different aspects of what it means to be an introvert, for example, or an extrovert, or a judger, or a perceiver. And so from a personal point of view in developing self-awareness, that can be very valuable, but it, it's not something that I'm going to look at in this more global measure.
I think we've got time for just one or two last questions.
Dennis Barton, my question is, has any work been done, or do you have any thoughts on within the profession, the desirable ratio of chiefs to Indians?
Of chiefs to Indians, was it?
Yeah, how many leaders do we need? Can't all be leaders.
The concept of leadership, certainly the concept I promote is actually a very broad-based one, so it's not just the concept of hierarchical leadership in an organisation. I mean, I think we've got many, many leaders, for example, already in the profession. Leadership might be in the areas of research, for example, so that you take a leading role there and you bring other people in behind you in terms of conducting research. There are many people I'm aware of who are making a leading contribution in the community in a whole range of capacities. Some people are doing it through practice committees and other institute committees. Some are doing it through their organisation. So when you actually think about the diversity of capacities in which one can exert leadership, it's actually very broad. I think the most effective styles do evolve from people, first of all, just wanting to make a contribution and by demonstrating that they're very effective, they actually evolve into those sort of leadership roles. So I think in many respects there are actually many more leadership roles than are commonly perceived. I know the organisation I work for example, we've identified just in terms of the breadth of roles that we have, whilst we might have 8 or 9 operating divisions, we've actually got a need for 200 leadership positions covering the facet of initiatives that we're involved in. So there's plenty of capacity for it.
Just have one last question. Yep.
Ian Pollard, firstly, Leonie and Andrew, great subject matter, well presented, thank you. I've missed the first couple of minutes, you may have covered this, but to what extent can people's personality types change during their life? What research has been done on that?
I think the theory behind at least this measure is that you have these preferences from birth and they remain with you for your lifetime, and that there's some kind of biological underpinning to these preferences. But then Jung would have said that we can become more adept at using styles that aren't our natural preference, so that over time, as we become more mature, we can become more flexible and adaptable in using different styles. But he would argue, I think, that the basic preference remains the same throughout life. I think that's slightly different to other personality measures, which focus more on the potential for change over the lifetime. This is really looking at an innate temperament rather than demonstrated personality behaviour.
At this point, we'll draw it to a close. I'd like you all to join with me, please, in thanking Andrew and Leonie.